Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Exposing them to a network that they can then plug into, then expose them to deal flow, and then expose them to the opportunities to take action.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Hello, best ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Ash Patel, and I'm with today's guest, Danny Bramer. Danny is joining us from Louisville, Kentucky. He is the founder of Cashflow MD, where he helps physicians generate cash flow so they can work because they want to, not because they have to. Danny's portfolio consists of all things real estate: multifamily hotels, triple net properties, mobile home parks, RV parks, assisted living, car washes, and self-storage. Danny, thank you for joining us, and how are you today?
I am awesome, man. Thanks so much for having me on the Best Ever Podcast, Ash. I really appreciate the way your all's organization continually gives back to those in your investor circle. I've definitely benefited from your podcast, learned a ton from the Joe Fairless crew and everyone in your circle. So thanks again for having me on.
You are very welcome. Danny, if you would, can you give the best ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a physician by training, a serial entrepreneur for a living for many, many years now. I've been a business owner, real estate investor for over two decades while gaining expertise in a lot of different asset classes, as you mentioned. My story to real estate is a little bit convoluted. I'm the youngest of a large family. My dad was a builder in the 70s when interest rates were sky high, so we didn't have a lot of means growing up. But my dad really instilled hard work, honesty, integrity, character, and those types of things in us. And he walked those out every day of his life and instilled them in all the kids as well. And they were always just super generous with their time and their finances, whether it be for churches or organizations or anything like that. So I kind of had a missional background, and fast forward to my first mission trip out of the country, and I was absolutely hooked, man. Medicine was where I was meant to be. I went back to medical school a little bit later in life, and really the first taste of the possibilities of real estate was in medical school when I flipped some single family homes and kept some single family rentals to help pay for medical school. And then After residency, I had an unbelievable job in Alaska, which is quite literally one of the most beautiful places on the planet. I was a partner in my anesthesia practice, four awesome kids, an amazing wife. Life was awesome. And then what started as a floater in my left eye while balancing my checkbook one day when I was off really turned into something that's going to change the course of mine and my family's career forever. After tons of testing and sleepless nights and lots of pokes and prods, I found that I had a progressive autoimmune condition, thankfully, that was only going to affect my vision, but was definitely going to take away my ability to practice anesthesiology. So I really remember the day I had to call my partner and tell him, I'm not going to be able to come in because I couldn't see well enough to do my job. And little did I know, at that point, that was the last time I'd ever practice clinical anesthesiology again. So that was a hard moment, obviously, tough to digest. All the years of hard work and dedication that we put into medical school and residency, I say we, because my family goes through this with you, you know, this was all in jeopardy. And there was fear and anxiety and worry and all the things. But really, my faith beliefs and my family were my two rocks in getting me through those tough times. And we're going to experience tough times in this world for sure, but we don't have to go through them alone. And I went from one day thinking I had a brain tumor because of all the symptoms that I was having, like nausea, the dizziness, the sudden onset headache, balance issues, and those types of things that were going along with my condition, to realizing, okay, it's just my vision and we can overcome this. So then I went on a long journey of searching for other career and business opportunities. I went to conferences, I was offered a chief medical officer position. And at some point I realized that all of these things I was looking for were just jobs and they could be taken away as well. And as an employee, I'm one catastrophic life event away from potential financial devastation. So we all need to work. I'm not saying quit your job, but we also need to prepare for a time that that may be taken away from us. So as I navigated my new normal, one idea that really materialized and stuck with me going forward was no matter what the path forward was, I didn't want my income to be based on a job or a circumstance, because both of those can change very quickly. And that's what I was experiencing firsthand. And I knew there were a bunch of different asset classes out there, three main ones. I saw my dad lose pretty badly in the stock market when he needed it the most during his retirement years. So paper assets really didn't appeal to me. I didn't live in Texas or Oklahoma at the time, and I wasn't an oil and gas guy. So striking it rich in oil didn't seem super likely. I was living in Fairbanks, Alaska, as I mentioned at the time, and gold fever was running wild. So there's tons and tons of, we call it investing, but it's more like speculating in that space. So that didn't really appeal to me as well. And then came real estate. I had previous success in flipping homes, like I said, and then I read a book that should be required reading for any person looking how to create wealth, which is Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and then had a chance encounter with a medical school colleague and a wedding we were both in, and all those factors combined to change the trajectory of mine and my family's life forever.
Danny, that is a whirlwind of a story. I'm glad it's got a happy ending. And how did you find time to flip houses while in med school?
Well, maybe I should have parsed my words a little better. I was flipping properties before med school, and that helped pay for a lot. And then I kept the single family homes during med school under the watch of a property management group. And then that helped me out with cash flow during med school as well.
Understood.
But I think a lot of physicians out there, you know, equate med school and residency and those types of things. We learn a lot in medical school, but we really hone our craft in residency. So I don't want you to think that I got out of med school and went straight into real estate, because I didn't know what I didn't know at that point. The business partner I mentioned before, he and I sought out paid mentors in the space way back when to really teach us everything they knew about multifamily. They opened all their books to us, their processes, their methods and such. And he and I scaled very quickly to over 800 units of multifamily in a matter of just a few years. But most importantly, I was able to replace my income as a physician in about 15 months from buying our first apartment complex. So that was definitely proof of concept for me and a huge relief to my wife, of course. We started out heavily invested in multifamily. I'm a big believer in diversification, no matter what asset class you're in. So then I started looking into different avenues of real estate in order to generate multiple different income streams, because I believe true financial freedom is not just one or two, but multiple passive income streams. And I'm an experiential learner. So learning by doing, best method for me. So I really started learning everything I could about all these different subclasses of real estate, as well as private equity investing, debt investing, alternative investing. And I started out branching out into hotel and then events and then triple nets like Walgreens and Dollar Generals, mobile home parks, self-storage, RV parks, short-term vacation rentals, pretty much the gamut. If it's a hard asset that I can touch and has intrinsic value, I'm pretty interested in learning how I can make it cash flow.
Danny, are you actively managing these assets or are they passive investments?
Great question, Ash. And I really like to talk about being actively passive. A lot of the times we can get the tax benefits, which we probably don't have a lot of time to go into in this podcast, but there's a lot of tax benefits with active investing. But there's also a lot of time wrapped up in active investing. So what I like to do is be in general partnerships and sponsored positions to where I am actively involved in the deal, but quickly incorporate systems and processes and people to put into place to where I can back out of it very, very, very quickly. And it acts as a form of passive income from my time standpoint.
Okay. So you educate fellow physicians on the benefits of real estate investing. You take their capital, invest it into deals, and you are part of the GP team as well.
A lot of the times, yeah. A lot of the times I'm part of a GP team. Some of the time, and this is kind of getting into the fund model, I've since created a fund because, well, I guess just going back to the reason I created Cashflow MD is I had physicians reaching out to me quite a bit, just wondering how did I do what I did? How was I able to become financially free outside of medicine? And they'd want to take me out to dinner or grab lunch or coffee or what have you. And after gaining 40 pounds, I decided that an educational platform was probably the best way to offer actionable investments to my investors. And my overall goal is to empower, equip, and enable physicians, from pediatricians to surgeons, understand really how to make money work for them, not the other way around. So that's what spawned, I guess, the fund model. And the reason I did create that was, it's not something I came up with by any means, but from my standpoint, it was born out of necessity. Because as more and more people asked to be in the deals that I was in, I wanted to find them a way to have access that made sense, but I wanted to be more inclusive. Now, the way the fund works is I can go into the deal as a general partner. I can go in as preferred equity. I can go in as preferred debt. I can go in with a higher class of shares. It gives us a lot of versatility and flexibility as into how we want to go into the deals. So it's kind of a long way to answer your question. So yes, I can go in as a general partner, but if it benefits the group to go in as a limited partner with a higher class of shares, then that's what we'll do as well.
So Danny, you currently have a fund of funds model. However, when you first started out, did you establish an entity where all of your investors pool their money and then you invested? Or did the investors directly invest into the syndication and you were somehow credited as part of the GP team?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the beautiful thing about the fund of fund is what happens is I will go out and then I will find the best deal. We can talk about this later, but I'm asset agnostic. So if it meets all my criteria, then I'm interested in it. So the fund to fund allows me to have one centralized fund, and then that fund can then invest in several different types of deals in different subclasses of real estate. Say there's maritime shipping deal, there's a mineral rights deal, multifamily and mobile home park. It allows me to go into each one of those. And if an investor can go into my portal, then they can look at the deals that we're offering. If none of those deals appeal to them, they don't have to invest in the fund. But once they find a deal that appeals to them, they put that money into the fund and then they direct where they want that money to go. So if they're interested in the maritime shipping deal, then what they would do is invest in the fund and then direct us to put those funds towards the maritime shipping deal.
How are you compensated for them doing that?
The main way I'm compensated is my money's right alongside theirs investing. So I don't bring deals to our group that I'm not personally investing my money in as well. So I make money on the deal itself because we're all investing. I benefit from a better potentially class of shares or a better waterfall structure since we're investing more dollars. So that's one way. And it's really deal specific. So sometimes I'm able to negotiate much better waterfalls. And then I may take a bit of that waterfall as promote for my work negotiating that. But they will always get a better waterfall split investing through me than they would investing directly through whatever sponsor we're going through for the deal, if that makes sense.
It does. And Danny, you're able to charge fees for your fund platform. What fee structure do you charge?
Yeah, once again, the fund level fees are pretty fixed. It's banking fees. Actually, with my fund, for the first year, it's on a platform. So there's that setup fee. There were also Blue Sky filing fees. And I didn't want to adversely affect my new investors or early adopters. So I internalized and ate all those Blue Sky filing fees because, as you know, once you file in one state, you don't have to file it again. So any one-time fee, I took upon myself as an expense. So any bank fees, transaction fees, wiring fees, ACH fees, taxes to do the fund, taxes, that stuff will then flow back into the expenses of the fund. But we try to keep our expenses, first of all, they're very transparent. And then second of all, we try to keep them very, very low.
And as a representative of a fund of funds, are you very well received today by syndicators versus a year ago?
Another great question. I think you probably know the answer to this as well. I think as it's becoming more and more mainstream, and I say that, I've only heard of the fund to fund model about 2 years ago. So it's relatively new on the scene, but I think it really fills a void from really strong operators who don't want to necessarily deal with the mechanics of running a fund and investor relations and those types of things, to people like me who love educating and who love talking to physicians and dealing with investor relations. I think as fund managers, we can fit a very important niche that a lot of these sponsors and operators are looking for with filling in the capital piece. And with my background, a lot of the times, if I'm a general partner, sometimes I may actually bring in the deal to the group. I can be involved in all the due diligence. I can be involved in picking the property management, managing the managers. So there's a lot of different things where I can plug in. But I think the biggest value or void we can fill is really that capital investor relations piece that a lot of operators really had to hire a whole new separate team to take care of.
Danny, you've got a history being a physician, so you can relate to all these other physicians. My wife's a physician. A lot of our investors are. And for whatever reason, they make the worst investors out there, doctors. A lot of my doctor friends invest in the craziest FOMO investments, marijuana companies, crypto, the next big thing. Have you noticed that as well?
I have. And it's sad because a lot of the ways that we are trained as physicians to be critical thinkers and to work algorithms and to find differentials and possibilities and really, to put it in real estate terms, do our due diligence. A lot of those go out the window when it comes to investing. And a lot of it comes down to, in medical school, we are told you practice medicine and you worry about taking care of the patients and let somebody else take care of your finances. And I think that's a lie that's been perpetrated throughout our entire financial education. And I do think as physicians' time constraints become much tighter, they're forced to see more patients for less dollars. As the burnout rate goes up and those types of things, I think physicians are starting to wake up and being like, I do need to take more control of my financial future, and reaching out to folks like us to maybe point them in the right direction.
Yeah. And a lot of physicians, and I'm not picking on them, they make horrible investors. And part of the reason is they've never had the luxury of free time to learn about financial literacy and investments, right? Most physicians don't have time for a hobby, let alone a necessity like financial education. So they heavily rely on others. Now, where I'm going with this is my LinkedIn feed is full of capital raisers, and many of them targeting physicians. I help doctors retire early. I help doctors retire in 5 years. And the list goes on and on. There's almost no barrier to entry for becoming a capital raiser. What are your thoughts on that? Because it seems like they're coming out of the woodwork now.
Yeah, my mantra is always buyer beware. I think you need to understand the depth and the breadth of the person where you are placing your capital. And do they have real life experience? Do they have time spent in the muck, in the mire? Do they know how to underwrite? Do they know how to acquire? Do they know how to negotiate? Do they know how to do all the key things that are involved from beginning to end, from first LOI to exit, and then 1031, and then. So I think it's really, really important to do your due diligence on the people that you are willing to or wanting to place capital with. I do it. You do it. I live in horse country. I'm in the middle of Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse. And I've been in the thoroughbred industry for many years. And I can't tell you how many people are super successful financially outside the horse business. And then they'll come and give somebody that they barely know, let's say $500,000 to go and find them the next Kentucky Derby winner without doing any research as to what that entails. Most of us say, that's crazy, right? Who would do that? Well, a lot of these folks that are placing capital with these capital raisers that are coming out of the woodwork are doing just that.
Also, I'm quite jaded on capital raisers because in my almost 15 years of doing this, all the capital raisers who have approached us, we'll have conversations with them. We've never used capital raisers, but we'll have conversations with them. And when we have a deal that's onboarded, they will literally want to throw their investors' money at us and almost no due diligence other than what are the returns? Can I get a higher return from my group? What's in it for me? But no due diligence questions on the deal, no background checks, due diligence on myself or my team. They just want to deploy capital so they can get the rip on the deal. And in all those years, we had one person who is a capital raiser. He invested his own money in two of our deals just to see how we communicate, how when we go full cycle, is everything on the up and up? And he did that with two different deals, his own money, before he felt comfortable putting his investors' money into our deals. And again, we've never had the need to raise outside money through capital raisers. But that's why I'm a bit jaded. You should be jaded too, because you're competing with all of these people that are in this arena just wanting to make a rip off of people's money, placing it into deals.
Yeah, I'll just go back to doing your due diligence and being very, very knowledgeable about where you're putting your money. And, you know, I guess it doesn't really bother me as much from a personal standpoint because I know where I'm putting my money. I know the people that I'm operating with. I've known them for years. And these are just investments that I'm doing anyway. And so I'm opening them up to others that are able to come alongside me. So I don't necessarily look at those other folks that are simply raising capital as competition as much as just somebody to use as a cautionary tale.
So Danny, let's take this opportunity to educate our passive investors on what questions they should be asking the capital raisers or the fund of funds people before they invest their money.
The questions that I would want to know is, A, just like you said a minute ago, what due diligence have you done on the operator, sponsor, or general partner, depending on how we are going into the deal? And if we are, however we're going into the deal, I want to know the return parameters, not only what they mean to me as the investor, but then the question you ask, how am I getting paid? What is my motivation behind bringing this deal? So if somebody is not investing their own money and somebody does not know the operator, but they're just doing it because of the juicy pro formas, then that's a big red flag. If the operator or the fund-to-fund manager's money is going right next to my money that's going to invest in, they've known the operator for years, they've done deals with them, they have a very sound investment thesis and why they're doing what they're doing, and they're a best-in-class operator, then that's going to make me feel much more comfortable. A lot of the due diligence questions should be asked of my due diligence process too. How do I vet the sponsors? Or how did I become a general partner in this? Have we done deals together? What are their full cycle returns look like? How many market cycles have they lived through? We both know that you could have fallen backwards into real estate from 2017 to 2021 and made money. I want to know somebody's made it through the Great Recession and figured out some things. I want to see that they've had a few gray hairs and a few failures that they've learned from, or at least they've maybe learned from their mentors who had those failures. They understand the pitfalls, those types of things. I want them to understand the space and the asset class very, very well. I don't want this to be their first deal in whatever asset class they're investing in.
How important is it that the fund-to-funds person also have active real estate investing experience? They've taken down their own deals.
To me, I think it's vital, because how else do you know practically what to ask unless you've done it yourself? It's just like residency. In medical school, we start as first-time residents thinking we know everything until July 1st hits us. And then it's like, oh my gosh, we know nothing. So experience is a great, great educator. And the more experience people have, the more I'm going to trust them, as long as their results are good, right? I don't want somebody who's a continual failure and then trumpets, well, at least I learned a lot. I want to see some success as well. But yeah, that's a very good point, Ash.
Yeah. Yesterday, I had a conversation with my CPA. This guy is one of the most sought after real estate CPAs in the area. And I was putting this together. What makes him great for real estate is that he is also a real estate investor. To this day, an active real estate investor, takes down his own deals. And I think you're right. Somebody that's fund of funds or taking other people's money to invest needs to have that skill under their belt. They should have been an active real estate investor.
Absolutely. We never took on limited partners until 2022. It's like everything we did was in an active partnership. Now, I've been a part of general partnerships that had limited partners, but I wasn't necessarily the one taking care of those. I was more operational. So for the most part, every asset class that you see on my website, I've been actively involved in.
Danny, doctors are very elusive creatures. And when it comes to real estate capital, everybody wants them as investors on their team. What's your recommendations for people that are raising money for deals or fund-to-funds model? How do you get in front of docs, build their trust, and get them as investors with you?
With me, I resonate with physicians because I know their pain points. I understand the fact that my wife's a physician too. I see the unbelievable push for RVUs, and the burnout rate is alarming. And I think understanding their situation and then really offering actionable solutions. One of the first things we work with new investors, have five pillars of financial freedom. The first thing I work with is mindset and discussing and deprogramming their financial education. We talk about things like assets and liabilities and profit and loss statements, and understanding once your passive income is starting to outpace your expenses, then you have a level of freedom. Once your passive income outpaces your physician income, then you're truly financially free. So I think it's just understanding the population and being able to give them the information with the deprogramming of what we've learned in our financial construct, and then helping them with the learning aspect of it, figuring out what subclasses they're interested in, exposing them to a network that they can then plug into, then expose them to deal flow, and then expose them to the opportunities to take action. So there's a lot of work that goes into becoming a physician, but it's very algorithm based. So as long as you can show physicians a pathway, if you can show us that, okay, I can take you from here to here, and this is how we do it, then I think it's going to resonate with physicians a lot more. Because we're scientists at heart. We want to see that you know what you're doing and you have a clear pathway to get there.
That is great advice. Danny, what is your best real estate investing advice ever?
You're going to make me say one thing? Man, that's put me on the spot there. If you're just starting out, I think the best way to just start out is to read voraciously. And this is something that all physicians are at least used to doing. We may not love it, but we're used to doing it because we're lifelong learners. But it's the easiest way to learn from others and what they've done. It doesn't mean you're going to do what they do, or maybe you won't get a whole lot out of it, but it's the best way to learn the space. And it's by far the cheapest form of education. I mentioned Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but there's Cash Flow Quadrant. There's Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright. That's life-changing. Killing Sacred Cows by Garrett Gunderson. The Lifestyle Investor by Justin Donald. Who Not How, Dan Sullivan. Really start to deprogram what you've been taught about finances, mold your mindset, and it can really set you up for success for the rest of your entire life. The same goes for podcasts, YouTube, social channels, Facebook groups, masterminds, really anything that is specific to the subclass of investing that you're interested in. There are tons of free resources out there.
You ready for the best ever lightning round?
Let's do it.
All right. What's the best ever book you recently read?
The best ever book I've recently read. From a spiritual and personal growth standpoint, I would say John Mark Comer's Ruthless Elimination of Hurry is excellent. It really delves into how and why we live such hurried lives and how we miss a lot of goodness in each and every day. He does a really good job of fleshing out the offenders and giving actionable ways to take back your time. It's a great book. From a professional and growth standpoint, I mentioned it just a minute ago, Dan Sullivan's Who Not How. It's been a great resource for me the past couple of years as I've grown my business, to really remind me to ask the question, who can help me reach that goal, rather than how can I do it myself? Especially as physicians, we're really programmed to be self-sufficient, but this really breaks down those mindset barriers to understand that it's people, not you necessarily. It's really empowered me to expand my network from releasing me from the lie that I have to do everything myself. And it's an excellent book for anyone wanting to grow professionally, whether it's your medical practice or building your investment team.
Danny, I want to circle back and ask one more question about capital raising. Right now, anybody that's a syndicator is having a tougher time raising capital. We've had some turmoil in multifamily. The headlines are not great. So syndicators have to work a little bit harder to raise capital. Are you able to place your funds in a lot more deals today because it is so hard raising capital?
Yes, it is probably harder to raise capital, but I really believe that there's always good deals out there, especially as you grow your network and you understand who the good operators are. And really, really good operators will always have good deals to be involved in. So I personally have not seen that tension between being able to raise funds for the deals. If anything, there's probably right now in my ecosystem more deals to be vetted by me before I bring them to my investor group. I just want to make sure when I bring my investor group the deal that it has been fully vetted and gone through my due diligence process, and I am 100% ready to put my money into it. So that's usually when I bring those types of deals to my investors.
Danny, is your bottleneck typically investor capital or deals?
It's usually deals. I have a lot of deals, and I've got a VA that sifts through all the deals, and then they funnel down to my inbox, and then I go through the deals, and then they really have to meet a lot of very strict criteria before I'm going to put my capital in it. And that just comes from years of chasing shiny pennies and FOMO and being burned. So there's a lot of things that I look for in a deal. And if it can check most of the boxes, then I can continue to complete the process. And for a lot of the deals, they've gotten to 90% of what I want or almost to the finish line. And then something will pop up that I just kind of pull the plug on. And a lot of it has to do with people are entrusting my platform to give them good, actionable deal flow. Then I want to make sure that I'm bringing them something as bulletproof as possible.
What are some easy ways you disqualify deals?
Oh, easy way? Outlandish return models first of all. That's one way. Another way is down to the deal level itself. Once I start looking at the deal, certain asset classes, if they have certain characteristics, it's just a non-starter for me. So we'll take mobile home parks, for example. If it's a mobile home park and it's what they call a master metered mobile home park, to where all the electric runs into an electric house, and then you're responsible from the electric house on, I don't jump into those deals at all. It's just a non-starter for me because I don't want to be a electric company. Or if it's multifamily, a certain age I won't be involved in, crime scores. So it's really more of the getting to the deal level. And then I have acquisition criteria that I give my VA, and my VA sifts through the deals based on the acquisition criteria. But everything that hits my inbox have met at least superficial acquisition criteria. But then when I start to dig in, there are certain red flags that are just non-starters for me.
What's the best ever way you like to give back?
What a great question. What a great way to prompt ideas in your listeners as well. I really think it's important to give back no matter what stage of life you're in. And the best way I have found to give back is serving others. It's really hard to be sour or angry or selfish or really any other bad character trait we don't like to see in ourselves when we're serving others. So one of the things I learned many years ago working in medical missions is how the people we serve generally do community much better than we do in the Western world. And it usually comes down to they were taught to be very others focused and community oriented from a very early age. So we've practiced this in our family ever since I can remember, and serving is really the best way ever that I know to give back.
Best ever listeners, thank you as well for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review, share this podcast with someone you think can benefit from it. Also, follow, subscribe, and have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.